Jeffrey, I have Darren for you.
Okay. Darren.
Hey, man, how you been?
Hey. Are you in New York or out here?
I'm out here for, I'm going on the red eye back to New York. I just came out for a couple of days.
Okay. So you just got back directly from Rome and...
Yeah, the whole madness. Yeah. Or...
So why didn't the Pope want to meet with you guys initially? Why did he go with that?
I have no idea what that whole thing was. Everyone writes stories and stuff. You know, who knows what it all was. I just, you know, I was very much inspired by a year ago when he first got into office. He talked about stewardship and about, you know, our responsibility to creation. And he's already visited the Amazon, and he's clearly, you know, taking the environmental issues very, very serious.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Which we found in Genesis as well, and so
right.
I just find it pretty inspirational that he's, you know, talking about that type of stuff.
I didn't take notice initially of his humanistic bent and his exceptional philosophy and manner,
yeah.
Until
yeah.
people like Sarah Palin started saying, "Wait a minute, this guy isn't doing the thing that we like," you know.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's a good tip. But just the fact, you know, a Jesuit taking a Franciscan name, and also St. Francis is, you know, the saint of animals, and
yeah.
that's all really interesting what he's doing. It's definitely a shift in the right direction.
Speaking of shifts, there's a you know, throughout the whole drumbeat leading up to the opening of Noah, the whole problem was the Christians aren't going to like it. It varies. It strays. It doesn't, toe the line. And obviously, at least if I'm reading the tea leaves right, the last few days, I'm getting the idea that that's not happening, that they're actually down with it. Is that what you're hearing? Or
yeah, I would say the controversy is not really a controversy anymore. It's kind of old news. And, the controversy was based on people who hadn't seen the movie, and, you know,
just like
you know, I think
temptation.
No one's done an Old Testament movie in 50 years. And so everyone was very suspect, but I don't think people realized how long I've been working on this and how much research I've done and how serious Ari Handel, my co-writer, and me, you know, took the source material and really examined it and tried to, you know, interpret it for a 21st century audience. And I don't know. There's this whole literal bent out there that's very, very frustrating, like that there could be something literal to the Noah story when you're talking about such a, you know, fantastical and mythical world as the pre-Diluvian world is. You know, when you, in the Bible, it talks about giant angels, and it talks about a world without rainbows, and it talks about people living for 1,000 years. And everything in the story is miraculous.
Yeah.
And how could you portray that with any sort of sense of realism is beyond me. And just the whole idea of literalism, you know, the second you cast Russell Crowe, that literalism is out the window.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I talk about, you know, not to compare myself in any way or the project to the Sistine Chapels, but, you know, Michelangelo, that moment when their fingertips are about to touch is an interpretation. That E.T. moment is not a moment in the Bible. It's artistic license.
Sure.
And so there's a long tradition of artistic license with the religious text.
Yeah. Here's a question from a reader that I think is kind of funny. What does Mr. Aronofsky find more wearying, explaining his vision to overly literal religious folks or to overly literal anti-religious folks?
Well, yeah, that's you know, that's that's exactly the point. You know, as soon as you start, you know, having the conversation about history, it's a silly conversation to me because you know, you get non-religious people saying, "Well, how did all those animals fit on the ark?"
Yeah.
But that's not the power of this story. The power of the story is in it's that it transcends that and become and in myth it becomes super powerful. Like take, you know, I mean, you talk about you know, Greek myth, and you talk about Icarus. You know, you don't question how he took wax and feathers and flew too high to the sun. Yet the power of that story, the idea that, you know, hubris and flying too close to the sun is dangerous, is incredibly powerful. And and there are really powerful ideas in the Noah story. Mm-hmm. It was a great cautionary tale written a very long time ago that people have been repeating and telling over and over and over again. And that cautionary tale about, you know, if you are wicked and you fill the world with violence and corrupt the world, then you will be destroyed. Mm-hmm. And that we are now living the second chance that Noah was given, and you have been warned, is a really, really great and powerful idea for everyone to talk about and think about.
That's why I was in with it and down with it well before I saw it, because I sensed that that was the metaphor, at least one of the metaphors you were you were going with.
No, well, thank you for that, Jeff.
But the thing that what got seized me more than I didn't even realize from the early reviews that it was going to be, it's really a wonderfully imaginative and I just love the, there's this odd curious, I mean, really curious. I didn't expect to feel this, but did you, I actually felt there was a kinship and a relationship between your film and Michael Tolkien's The Rapture. Did you ever see that film back in 90?
I did. When I was at AFI, he actually came to speak, but we're talking about the early 90s, so it's, I really don't remember it. It's been a long, long time since I've seen it.
Well, I can feel the vibe of a angry, not terribly, you know, happy with the way things are going, creator. I can feel there's a creepy vibe in this thing. I didn't expect to feel that. I thought there might, I didn't know what I was going to get, but it's really odd and eerie and it kind of got to me.
Oh, that's great.
You know?
That's great.
It's part of the imaginative, you know. I mean, it's just, it's just your own planet, man. That's what I love about films that are happening first and foremost in the director's head, and then he manifests or she manifests as best he or she is able to do. And that's the essence.
Well, that's, you know, I mean, for me, different is the way to go. Yeah. We get enough of the same stuff, you know, and by the end of the summer, everyone's going to be saying that, you know.
Yeah.
Let's see some fresh stuff. And, you know, I just try to make things, you know, exciting and different and keep trying to reinvent stuff. And when you're dealing with something that has so much expectations, like the Noah story, where people have basically turned it into a fable for kids, and there's a guy with a long white beard and the animals all sweet walking in single file onto the ark that's built like a houseboat, it's something that is hard to change people's take on it, because it's just been so ingrained into our culture that way. But when you read what's actually in Genesis, it's a very much scarier story. It's the first apocalypse story. It's the first end of the world story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something people forget is the first thing Noah does after the whole flood is he gets drunk. And not just drunk, he gets naked drunk, which I know never happened to me, but has happened to you many times, Jeff. And but that is, you know, to me, that was a really interesting character moment to sort of explore and to expand on.
Yeah, yeah. The do you believe in anything literal about it? Do you believe, for instance, that there was quite possibly a local flood in what used to be Mesopotamia, which is where? Somewhere in Iraq, right?
I mean, who knows? Once again, it's so much more powerful if you interpret it as poetry.
Yes,
if you look at everything that happens before Babel as metaphor and symbol and poetry, it becomes very, very powerful. And it becomes much more useful as something that belongs to everyone on the planet. You got to remember, this is one of the oldest stories ever told. It's one of the greatest stories ever told because people keep telling it and it keeps showing up. There's something amazingly resonant about it. And even if you're not part of the Judeo-Christian Muslim tradition, Islamic tradition, you have a flood story. The Aboriginals have a flood story. The Maya have a flood story. In the Amazon, there's a flood story. In China and Japan and in India, there's a flood story.
Okay.
So there's something elemental about our relationship to water. Now, in the time of Hurricane Sandy, and, you know, it's becoming once again, and the Fukushima, we all kind of can really starting to connect and relate with in our present day.
Except for the climate change deniers, then that's...
Yeah, but that's just silly, you know, and not even worth talking about anymore or giving any more press time for them.
Right.
It's just like, you know, even if you deny that, the impact we're having on the planet is undeniable. You know, I wrote, you know, I was working on a Western many years ago, and I was thinking that, you know, in the year 1860, if every person was to disappear besides some forged metals like horseshoes and belt buckles and guns and bullets, everything would be gone in a couple of hundred years. And, you know, in the last 40, 50 years, we've created so many different types of new chemicals and plastics that are around and have impact on us, you know, for as long as we can remember, for as long as we can look into the future. And that's the other thing that's just so ironic is, you know, today's the 25th anniversary of the Exxon Valdez spill. I was actually I spent 5 weeks in Prince William Sound 3 years before that, I was with a program called the School for Field Studies, and I was trained as a biologist reading Darwin's Origin of Species as my textbook. And you know, here we are, and it's still that environment has not recovered, and there's really, you know, man has sort of taken dominion over the planet, you know, which is in Genesis. But there's also another thing in Genesis 2:15 that man is supposed to tend and keep the garden.
Exactly.
And you know, it's clear we've taken dominion. The question is, you know, are we caring for this world?
And that's precisely the world philosophy, the worldview that Ray Winston's Tubal Cain articulates in Act 3 about, listen, this is our, you know, so that's quite well said in the film. You literally, though, invoke, and I thought that was fascinating, knowing you and where you're coming from, you literally evoke, like three times, is it, the presumed problematic evil of having taken a bite of the fruit of knowledge, which I thought, what is he doing here? He doesn't mean that it's problematic, so what is he saying? Could you, like a dumb guy, lay it out for me?
And the Noah story is kind of the fourth story in Genesis, right?
Yeah.
The first story is the beauty of creation.
Mm-hmm.
The second story is original sin.
Mm-hmm.
The third story, right after original sin, pretty much, is the first murder. Cain kills Abel. And then there's a huge time jump, right? We go 10 generations, and then suddenly the world is filled with violence. And man has corrupted the world, and God is so angry that he is grieved to his heart that he's going to destroy creation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the setup for me of the Noah story, is that we're at a place where you have an incredibly angry God who's willing to do the unthinkable and destroy what he's created.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you think about the entire film, that's Noah's story. You know, in the book, in Genesis, Noah doesn't have much of a character arc. You know, an arc with a C. He basically, you know, does what God tells him. So we decided to align Noah with God's arc, which is, you know, a man different than other men who can see what man has done to each other and to the world and wants justice. And over the course of the film, learns mercy and forgiveness and grace and gives the world a second chance.
Mm.
Jeff, you have time for one more question.
Oh, man, we could do a couple more questions. I love talking.
Yeah. I love that. I don't think that something of this...
They just hand me a note. I do have to go do some radio, but let's do a couple more.
All right.
Sorry about that.
I love that there's... an analogy between there's a lot of this God's vengeance and that God's law, God's rule will descend upon the sinner in two Cecil B. DeMille films. So there's almost a link here between the ends of Ten Commandments and Samson and Delilah. But DeMille, to my mind, he was one of the most hypocritical and revolting conservatives who believed in the blacklist and everything.
Oh, really?
Did you ever like read much about him, or
just recently? Only recently. I as a kid, I loved Ten Commandments. It was you know, incredibly watchable film.
Yeah.
You know? But I don't know much about the man, to be honest.
Did you? I had a chance to once again visit John Huston's film after I first That is really a tedious job, I'm telling you. I didn't remember it to be that flat-footed, but it really is. I mean,
yeah. Well, the tradition of Noah as a comedic character is a very strange tradition because the story is anything but comedy.
Right.
It once again the first apocalypse story, and it's actually a very, very sad story. Right. I mean, that's what I remember as a child learning about it was, am I good enough to get on the boat? And as we all know, we're not good enough to get on the boat. And that was terrifying to me as a kid. So that was always my take on it was, you know, and beyond that, what about all the you know, were there innocent people? Was there a newborn baby? What about all the animals that didn't get on the boat?
Yeah.
You know, if it was, it's an intense story that has very, very powerful ideas. And once again, it connects very, very well to, you know, as great myth does, it connects very well to us right now.
Now, one thing that this is my last question. The thing that I didn't quite fully understand about God's law as Noah saw it, which is that procreation and continuing the species, at least by his own, was a bad idea. The idea was to, you know, start really fresh. But that suggests that the Creator didn't believe there was any chance for any kind of good, God-fearing, you know, morality amongst men. I mean, why would there be a rule about, you know, his son can't have a kid? You know, what was that about? I didn't quite fully understand.
Well,
that.
Well, I don't know exactly what you're getting at, Jeff, but I mean, the whole thing is about.
I'm trying not to reveal what Russell Crowe's objection is to a pregnancy that's later in the film. I don't want to be too explicit.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, but we'll keep it off the record. I mean, don't spoil, please.
Right.
But, you know, this is about, does man, after the original sin, after destroying each other and the world, have a right in this new Eden? That's the big question that for me was at the core of this, because if you think about it, to go through the act of destroying all of the world, only so that man could do again what they already had done. Because what's the story right after Noah? It's Babel. So directly afterwards, Ham's descendants go on and build Babel and once again challenge God and have to be smited down. So why go through it? And so this seemed to me to be a real big question about, you know, man's... man's right to continue in this new world.
Yeah. Okay.
That's kind of the big theological question of the film.
So what's the next film for you, Darren? Are you going to do something?
I got no idea, Jeff, but next time, don't be so tough on me. You're always tough. You come after the ballet movie, you come after the haircuts on Noah. Give me a break.
Well, I couldn't figure out how we could have possibly
I'm always going to surprise you, Jeff. The thing is, you always have your I mean, since The Fountain, you always grasped it. I know you always saw what we were doing, so I thank you for that support.
All right.
But it was funny. We were reading all the early stuff, and it was like, oh, Jeff, give us a chance.
Yeah. I was a big Black Swan fan. I went nuts for that. Oh, you mean before it came out is what you're saying?
Whenever the films come out, you've been very supportive, but before they come out, you always tease me.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Fair point. All right, man.
Well, thank you very much for your time. And are you going to post a review?
Yeah. I already did. Please. I did immediately. I did yesterday. You'll find it online.
Look, I've been in press all day, but thank you for that.
Okay, pal.
All right, I'll talk to you soon, sir. Bye.
Talk again. Take care.
Be well.
Bye.